How to de-stress without stressing out about it. How many of us haven't wished our lives were simpler, more relaxed, and a lot less stressful? For many, even the thought of trying to unwind can be overwhelming in our fast-paced culture. There is so much competing for our attention, from work to family and everything in between. Finding time to relax can be stressful in and of itself. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and today on Maine Calling, we will learn about stress from two doctors who can tell us about its impact on the heart and on one's mental health. We'll get some practical tips about how to de-stress. We'll learn when stress might be a good thing. And we'll get some guidance on helping kids who are stressing out about the new school year. Maine Calling takes a moment to breathe and learn how to face stressful challenges with confidence. But first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The American Psychological Association reports that 77% of Americans report regular physical symptoms caused by stress. What about you? How many times per week or per day do you feel stressed? Do you know what's causing those feelings, and do you know what to do about them? Today on Maine Calling, we're looking at the detrimental effects of stress on the body and mind, some of the helpful effects, and we will learn tips for de-stressing. With me in the studio, Dr. Benjamin Grasso. He is Medical Director of Behavioral Health at Mercy Hospital. Also with us from Mercy Hospital is Dr. Craig Brett. He's the hospital's Medical Director of Cardiology. And as always, we want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on de-stressing? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. You can send a tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you both for being here today. I spent my morning reading articles about stress and one's health, and I've concluded, and you all correct me if I'm wrong, that there is a whole lot we still don't know about the effect of stress on one's health. What do we know? Does stress harm your health? And if so, how? Dr. Brett.
Thank you, Jennifer. Humans have evolved a very sophisticated system to deal with threats that are felt as stress to the body. And when we're under stress, we have very immediate activation of our autonomic nervous system. This results in responses that have been characterized as the fight or flight responses. So heart rate goes up, blood pressure goes up, our blood sugar level goes up. There's shunting of blood away from kind of elective functions toward the large muscle groups, all in response to action for to a threat. And sometimes this is the right thing for the body to do, but if overactivated or left on too long, we see problems.
Like what kind of problems?
Well, chronic stress and activation of those systems for longer than they really should be activated leads to more chronic problems with elevated blood pressure, elevated blood sugar, diabetes. One of the stress responses is to activate our clotting mechanisms in preparation for, say, an injury with an acute stress. That's something that might be helpful acutely, but is not something we want to have carry on. The propensity to clot can cause heart attack, stroke, and other serious medical problems.
Dr. Grasso, I want to bring you into this. What is the difference between, in your view, regular stress and chronic stress? When do we start worrying about the stresses in our lives?
One way of thinking about regular stress versus chronic stress is that regular stress is an acute reaction to a perceived threat, sort of what Dr. Brett has already referenced, that that we perceive a sense of danger, our hearts pound, we feel short of breath, we feel we have to either run and protect ourselves or fight for our lives, literally. I think the way most people think of stress is more sort of the chronic, long-term sense of worry, trepidation, a lot of bodily symptoms, feeling ill at ease, not sleeping well, and not necessarily understanding really why.
Dr. Brett mentioned diabetes, clotting and stroke, all sorts of physiological problems that can be exacerbated by stress. What about mentally? There are links between stress, chronic stress, and depression, yes?
Absolutely. Certainly, chronic stress or excess worry in many forms can certainly impact our mood, our sense of well-being. We can feel a sense of hopelessness or despair. the usual set of life circumstances can seem a lot more dim and less hopeful.
How do we know? How do our listeners know? Because all of us experience stress in our lives. How do we know when we should be worried about the stress in our lives and our reaction to that?
Symptoms of stress can often mimic symptoms of other types of medical problems. So as a cardiologist at Mercy, I see on a regular basis patients who have had chest pains or have had abnormalities in their how they feel their heart rhythm or shortness of breath. And it's a very common dilemma of whether these symptoms are from stress that they may be experiencing at the time or whether they represent a significant underlying medical problem. And to be honest, it can be very difficult to differentiate these two things. We often approach such a patient in the context of whether they have other risk factors. So, for example, a 24-year-old man who's having some chest pain during a stressful period in his time is certainly less likely to have a significant medical problem than the 48-year-old woman who's got a family history of heart problems, maybe has some high cholesterol, and is complaining of chest pain and is thinking maybe it's just stress.
And you mentioned, Ben, lack of sleep. What are some sort of behavioral things that would set off a red flag for you?
Well, if I may first come back
to
Dr.
Sure.
Brett's point, in my work at Mercy's emergency room, we see a lot of folks who come in who have great concern. They're having a heart attack, chest pain, shortness of breath, sense of impending doom. They feel anxious and are very worried that they're having a heart attack. So we see a lot of folks that have come in and have been seen and assessed by our medical colleagues, and a heart attack's been ruled out. And one thing I want to mention about that is that one of the immediate things we have to work with when we see folks in that setting is a sense of shame that a lot of people feel when they feel that there is, quote-unquote, not a real explanation for their cardiac-like symptoms.
Hmm. And does this? And I'm guessing this makes it worse.
Well, shame makes most things worse. And one of the points we make on a daily basis all day long, which I would hope the audience here might consider as well, is that there's not a whole lot of control we have over our wiring. In some ways, the message is not to take our wiring personally, that our bodies have this very ancient wiring in them that has evolved over hundreds of thousands or millions of years, and automatically certain things happen. But we tend to interpret it as evidence that we are weak or flawed or sick.
So we've talked a lot about some of the detriments to stress. What can we all do? I mean, we've all heard breathe deeply, take a walk. We did a whole program on meditation. Are these tried and true and really work, or maybe just the beginning of the journey?
I think the first and foremost, I would say breathing. It sounds so simple, but to learn to breathe correctly, to do diaphragmatic relaxation breathing, and I'd like to hear Dr. Brett's comments about the physiological consequences of breathing well, it's something that many of us do not do. We hold our breath, we breathe with our upper chest wall, and it's a very centering thing to do. It reminds us to be in the moment, not worrying about the future or ruminating about the past, and it settles down our body, and it helps to reset the body's alarm, which is the most important thing, back to stress.
I think, you know, the other thing that you see is that people who are under stress and are having symptoms, you know, maybe relating to the stress that are mimicking heart trouble, sometimes just knowing that these symptoms are not from their heart, sometimes they require some reassurance, some testing to show that it's not from the heart, it breaks the cycle because it does just spin. Someone is stressed with things going on in their life. They start getting symptoms. Then they start worrying that, you know, this represents an underlying coronary problem, and it just goes on and on. And I think, you know, sometimes some very simple testing or a look over from a provider can really break that cycle.
You talked about diaphragmatic breathing?
Right. Sorry.
How does one do that? If someone's sitting listening right now in their kitchen, how would they focus on their breathing, and what should one do?
It's very simple. Put your hands on your belly and relax the belly. Instead of trying to have a six-pack, you know, to let the belly relax and to breathe primarily by breathing in through the nose and inflating the belly like a balloon. And then allowing the air to exhale passively through the nose or the mouth and feel the belly collapse on its own. And then to take a few moments pause at the end of the expiration.
Why does this work?
Well, there is a physiologic reason. You know, you're decreasing the intrathoracic pressure, which is the pressure in the chest, and that helps the return of blood to the heart. That sets up a situation where the heart rate can be lower, and it does feel better.
It's interesting because I think a lot of us do this naturally. Someone commented the day of my wedding day, my florist said, "I was so impressed. Jennifer just took this great big breath and walked down the aisle. I wasn't aware that I'd done that, but it must be subconscious that when we are about to feel stress, our bodies know to take a big breath."
Well, sometimes I think that's true, and kudos to you, and maybe it's because you had a very nice wedding day. For some folks, it's very stressful, but sometimes I think instinctively folks do the opposite, and that is to literally hold their breaths or to breathe in a much more restricted fashion because they feel tense, apprehensive, sort of hypervigilant, again, scanning the surroundings and feeling under siege or under threat.
Mm. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you have questions about stress, call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. The reason we're having this program this week is because school starts for many kids next Tuesday, but for some schools this week. What should we be looking for in our kids? Are kids stressed out about the school year starting? And I mean, what's beyond the little nervous jitters that anybody has when something new is beginning?
Well, it's a very complicated issue. It depends on the age of the children. Mm. For example, the teenagers, like somewhere freshman, senior year, teenagers are complex creatures. I have a couple at home of my own. And they worry about all sorts of things, quite appropriately, about fitting in, about peer pressure to be part of a group, about where their schoolwork is taking them, where will they go to college, a lot of pressure at home to perform academically. But in many ways, I think the social pressure to fit, which is, I think, intensified and worsened by social media in some ways, is very challenging.
I think we should remember, too, it's, you know, the stress isn't just for the children. It's for the parents and the teachers and, you know, lots of other folks. As an adult cardiologist, I don't see children in my practice, but I see a lot of adults around this time with stress-related symptoms. And sometimes these additional stressors can trigger a problem in people who already have some underlying heart problems. This has been a well-known phenomena that's been seen for some time. After natural disasters, after the natural cycle of the school year, the beginning of school, around the time of sports seasons, you see a little uptick in the number of people that we see for real problems.
How does the news affect our population in stress? You know, I think of all the horrible news we've had lately. You know, of course, that horrible beheading. You know, ISIS, the Ukraine. Ben, if someone is already feeling, like you said, sort of helpless and worried and full of anxiety, is this a real addition to that sort of cocktail of stresses?
Absolutely. There is so much stimulation in the media. It's well beyond what our brains really had evolved to be able to manage. Our brains, in my mind, are you know, a couple thousand years behind us in terms of being accustomed to a small number of strangers that we might see in the course of a day and not being bombarded by the amount of information we have access to. In some ways, it's almost akin to overeating, that I think kids and young adults should be taught to sort of modulate their exposure to the media, because there's certainly such a thing as too much.
What's your advice on sort of balancing that desire to be well-informed, as our listeners are, with not letting it affect your life personally?
That's a great question. I'm curious about Dr. Brett's perspective from the physiological side, too. But from my perspective, it's learning to listen to the body. And the body and the mind are intertwined. But paying attention to oneself, again, having some quiet moments of checking in with oneself. And if you're feeling your heart's racing and your mind is sort of skittishly thinking from one thing to the next and worried about what, you know, is going to happen tomorrow and not feeling terribly settled, I think that's a good sign. It's time to slow down and perhaps have a little less exposure.
You know, there's a very interesting medical condition. It's called stress-induced cardiomyopathy. And it's this condition where there's really overactivation acutely of our stress response, and there's literal poisoning of the heart with too much adrenaline, and it results in the heart being stunned and not pumping properly. And you see this after a really severe acute stress. And the symptoms are just like a heart attack, chest pain, shortness of breath, sweatiness. And when patients with this problem come in, they look like they're having a heart attack, and it takes some testing to figure out what it is. But, you know, when I started my training, in the 90s, this was a rare thing. You hardly ever saw this. And now these are routine cases. You know, every week we have one or two of these. And so, is there more stress in today's world, or is it just more recognition of what this condition is? I don't know, but it's an interesting problem.
And as Dr. Brett and I spoke about this the other day, you were mentioning also that it's a much higher incidence among women than men.
Yes, that's the other interesting thing about stress-induced cardiomyopathy. And some people may know this by the term broken heart syndrome, because that's the classic manifestation of a terrible stress, like the death of a spouse can lead to this adrenaline poisoning. And women get this 10 to 1 over men. Why that is, we're not sure. Women are more sensitive to the effects of stress when it's an acute overload like this.
Wow. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have your comments and questions. Stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Northeast Delta Dental, administering dental benefits for businesses of all sizes in Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. Details online at nedelta.com. And Maine's public universities. You can help make Maine even smarter and stronger. Learn more at think.maine.edu.
There is no shortage of bad guy hackers. Hackers who do good, though? High demand, low supply, you know what happens.
It's really amazing because nowadays you can get a job without a high school degree for six figures if you know how to hack.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, a few good hackers, next time on Marketplace from APN.
That's coming up this evening at 6:30 here on MPBN. MPBN is once again pleased to be attending and a media sponsor of the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association's Common Ground Country Fair in Unity in September, Friday through Sunday, September 19th to the 21st, to be exact. We wanted to give you a heads up on a ticket offer MOFCA is running. Tickets can be purchased in advance for a significant savings. Visit mpbn.net for all the details. If you plan on attending, please visit us. MPBN staff and on-air personalities will be at the fair all 3 days to meet you. We have some events planned, and we'll also have our traveling recording studio, The Booth, powered by Revision Energy, there to give you the chance to weigh in on a variety of topics and possibly find yourself on MPBN radio later in the fall. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, taking the time to de-stress and why that's good for your health. With me in the studio, Dr. Benjamin Grasso. He is Medical Director of Behavioral Health at Mercy Hospital. Also with us from Mercy is Dr. Craig Brett. He is the hospital's Medical Director of Cardiology. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net, send a tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're going to go to the calls now, and starting with Joanna. Joanna, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Well, I'm happy that you took my call. I used to teach high school, and when kids got really stressed, I would teach them how to relax, put their books on the floor, put their heads on the desk, and then I would take them through this, tighten every muscle of, start with your feet and your legs and your belly and your chest and your arms. You just say tighten as much as you can and then relax. Take a deep breath and then tighten. And I'd work all the way through the system, and the kids loved it. It took about 5 minutes, and by the time the bell rang, they didn't want to get up and leave.
You said you taught high school?
Yes, I did.
And you got teenagers to do this without...
I got teenagers to do it, and I would say to them, when you feel stressed at home before you're going out, you're going to do something, lay down your bed and try this. You know, just tighten everything and relax and take a deep breath, and it really works wonderfully. Believe it or not, I had a class in college in relaxation.
Sounds like it was one of the best classes you took, Dr. Brett. Why does this work?
Stressing your muscles and then relaxing them, or tightening your muscles and relaxing them?
Well, I think I'm not sure I can give you an exact physiologic reason why that particular strategy might work, but maybe distracting the kids from, you know, the things that are all around them that are stressing them at that moment may be the ticket there. What do you think, Ben?
Well, I think that may well be right, but I'm not sure why or how it works, but it does work. It's another relaxation technique that's very simple, and I really appreciate the caller's point. And also the idea of a high school teacher doing some simple but systematic teaching of her students of these techniques that we should all know.
All right, Joanna, thanks for calling today. Going to Jane on Chibeg Island. Hi, Jane, you're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I was wondering, what are the long-term effects, if any, of too many incidents of adrenaline overload, such as people in domestic violence situations?
You know, there's an increasing body of literature on how these chronic stressors that are present or repeated episodes of acute stress, how that affects the body. And, you know, we've alluded to some of that earlier in the show, that with the activation of your nervous system so that your heart rate and blood pressure run higher, your blood sugar runs higher, that all these things over long periods of time can really start to injure the blood vessels. And blood vessel injury is what is the precursor to heart attack and stroke. So, you know, we do know that people who have, for example, PTSD, there's a body of literature that people who have been diagnosed with PTSD have a higher rate of heart attack and stroke. And so it's probably that mechanism, that these repeated, this repeated activation of these systems that weren't meant to be activated so long result in the injury to the blood vessels.
And I'd like to add to Dr. Brett's points that in my previous work with veterans in the VA for 5 years prior to coming back to Mercy, veterans, and particularly combat veterans who have combat-based PTSD and or a history of military sexual trauma, that it's a vicious cycle if it's not interrupted, of sleeplessness, of hyperactivation, hypervigilance, never being able to truly settle into the moment, feeling that there's a degree of risk that's being posed that is out of proportion to the moment, and it harms the body, it harms the mind, and it really affects people's lives.
We understand so much more now about treating post-traumatic stress than we did 10, 20 years ago. So I'm sure if you've worked in the VA, there may be people who have come to the VA in years past who you would encourage to come back if they're experiencing these.
Absolutely. A quick comment about, I mean, combat-caused PTSD is a whole other phenomenon. There are a lot of veterans that lived here in the state of Maine, so there are a lot of veterans in our midst, but absolutely there's much more to be done for veterans with PTSD.
Jane, thanks so much for calling in. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We're talking stress, going to Sarah in Belfast. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I just wanted to give a little tip about stress. I'm a blind sailor. I love sailing, but I can't always tell whether the conditions are really worthy of stress or not. I just feel stressed when it's windy and wavy. So what I've learned to do is sing, and I sing out loud. I sing all the verses, and I know what it's doing is teaching me, it's having me breathe. But so another way to get yourself breathing is just to sing, and if you can't sing right where you are, step outside and sing, and it helps incredibly. So thanks for this program. It's really good.
Oh, thanks, Sarah. Ben, is there scientific backing for Sarah's theory?
I don't know, but I think it's a wonderful suggestion, and it works for Sarah. I think it's a great idea. I'm also intrigued by the notion of Sarah sailing, blind sailing, if I understood correctly.
Sarah, how do you do that?
Well, first of all, I don't sail alone. There are some lonely blind sailors, but I sail with my sighted husband. I have a talking compass, which allows me, it's quiet when I'm on course, and it sounds an accelerating tone when I'm off to port and a different pitch when I'm off to starboard. And then so, just like anybody, I have to keep it on, you know, close to straight ahead. And then I'm really good with my hands, so I handle all the sails and all that stuff. But my husband has to keep me from hitting other boats.
That's really interesting. Well, Sarah, thanks for calling in and sharing your experience. Oh, go ahead, Ben.
Yes, and I'm intrigued also that something that for some of us might be rather terrifying, for Sarah is restorative or replenishing. And that's another twist to this whole stress piece.
I think that's a great point, Ben. I was going to tell Sarah that I get stressed sailing, and I can see. And I think, you know, like other activities that folks may choose for stress reduction, you know, there's no formula or right answer what some receive stress relief from, others it causes stress.
Thanks for calling. Going to Jane in Orono. Hi, Jane.
Hi. I'd like to absolutely agree with that last statement. What causes stress for some doesn't cause stress for others, and it's all just like everything else in this world, a diversity of experience. But I absolutely have to agree that the incidence of diabetes and all of the more chronic diseases that we have a direct correlation to stress. And if you think about long-term, you know, how the human species evolved, we've been through a lot of stress, and some cultures have been through more stress than others. All cultures have been through war and famine, and I think that we carry those memories with us. But I think that the disconnection to our to a decent diet of whole foods and clean air, clean water, safety and environment and love and support is increasing in our culture. We are not providing our children and or ourselves with that in the way that we need to in order to be a strong culture. So on the other end of the spectrum, I'd kind of like to know what Dr. Brett in particular has to say about nourishment of the blood vessels that break down from diabetes and other stresses. I haven't been able to find anything in the literature that supports nourishment of the blood vessels.
Well, you know, you make some great points, and thank you very much for your call. It's a little hard sometimes to separate out the injury to the blood vessels that cause stroke and heart attack that we see in people who are chronically stressed. It's a little hard to sort out what component is from the stress itself and what component is from the behaviors that result from the stress. So, you know, people that are chronically stressed tend to smoke cigarettes at a higher rate than people who are not chronically stressed. They may eat in a different way. They may forgo exercise. They may not be sleeping the same way. So there's a lot of secondary activities that we know are bad for the blood vessels that add to the problem. So I think, you know, the answer to your question really has to look at both those things. I think, you know, particularly in somebody who may have some propensity to develop atherosclerotic disease at baseline. So for example, somebody who's got some, you know, family history of heart disease, or maybe their cholesterol runs high, I think they're going to be at particularly increased risk for the effects of stress on their blood vessels. And they're the ones that really need to do what they can to improve their lipid profile, you know, healthy choices with diet, try to maintain an optimal weight. You know, the things that they have control over, they really need to emphasize.
All right. Jane, thanks so much for your call. Headed to Farmington and Jim. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, this is Jim. And by way of letting people know from where my comments come in my background, I'm one of the other kind of doctors. I'm a wildlife ecologist, but I've had an awful lot of training in invertebrate anatomy and physiology, and I've had my own coronary heart experiences. So I've had wonderful opportunities to delve into the literature that medicine presents us and other kinds of sources of information to do my homework. And I have two references that I think would be extremely valuable to people that are listening to the program. One is a National Geographic special. It's, I think, less than 10 years old. It's available on Netflix and probably in rental stores. It's called Stress, Portrait of a Killer. Extremely comprehensive. And the other reference is a book in second or third edition, which is called Primal Blueprint, by a man named Mark Sisson, who also has a blog called Mark's Daily Apple. And the book is very complex and very holistic about total human health, so it would be helpful to a lot of people. But there is a lot to the book and the blog that deals with stress. Your last caller would probably find that book very relevant to that issue of ways to improve the quality of the health of your body tissues, like linings of blood vessels.
As a scientist, did you study the effects of stress on animals that you studied?
Beg your pardon? The Stress Portrait of a Killer is a National Geographic article about human stress.
Right.
Biochemistry. The book is about human health. it's one of the biggies these days. It goes along with paleo diet, paleo, what's the other one called? There's a bunch of books that are out there. This is just one of them. But Primal Blueprint is in reference to a primal approach to the basic and best original human way of eating in a very healthful world. So it's a great book dealing with how to eat well, how to exercise well, how to avoid stress well, that sort of thing.
Okay, sure. Jim, thanks for calling. And Dr. Brett, you want to jump in there?
Well, I think, you know, there is no question that, you know, there's lots of factors that affect the health of the blood vessels, and it's not just stress. And lipid abnormalities, cholesterol abnormalities, some of which are genetic and really don't have anything to do with lifestyle issues, and some of which are lifestyle issues, are a major player in terms of what someone's vascular health is going to be. And I think, you know, again, people need to know what their lipid profile is. If they have the ability to improve it with a change in their diet to healthier foods, they need to do that. There are some lipid abnormalities that are not related to diet. And I think in folks who have those abnormalities, you know, knowing that they're at risk for heart problems, need to be particularly cognizant of what stress they're under.
Thanks for your call, Jim. Headed to Hupper Island. And John. Hi, John.
Hi there. How are you?
Good.
I just kind of curious. I've listened to some speakers, people calling in talking about disease as it relates to stress. And I'm a survivor of colon cancer, 3-year survivor, and it appeared to me, and you guys would know better than I would, that it was kind of a byproduct, if nothing else, the end of a long period. I mean, a really long period of stressful time. And I'm wondering whether there is any research whatsoever that links particularly devastating diseases like cancer to extended periods of stress.
That's a great question, John. I think a lot of people have that one. Is there a link between cancer and other horrible diseases and stress?
That is a great question. And, you know, one of the stress responses that we have is secretion of certain hormones that are helpful for the acute stress, like adrenaline and cortisol. But these hormones are actually, they work against our immune system. And so people that are chronically stressed, that have activation of these hormones, are immunocompromised, meaning that they're able to, you know, to be affected by illnesses easier than those who have normal immune function. And there is a very strong connection between certain malignancies and our immune system. And so I'm not sure I can quote you details on what types of carcinomas or cancers might be seen in higher rates in people who report chronic stress. But there's no question that with the immunosuppression you see with chronic stress, that link is likely there.
Thanks so much for your call, John. And on that note, we're going to go to another break. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
You make Maine calling possible, as do Casella, committed to effectively managing non-recyclable waste while protecting the environment. Casella, giving resources new life. Maine's public universities. Join the people who are making Maine even smarter and stronger. Learn more at think.maine.edu. And Revision Energy, now offering Own Your Power loans for solar energy systems. More at revisionenergy.com.
Seth Meyers is about to host the Emmys. On the next Fresh Air, we feature an interview with him. He's sat behind the SNL Weekend Update desk, he hosts Late Night on NBC, and he even stood behind the podium at the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
One that I imagine if you checked, you'd still see my grip marks in the wood.
Join us.
You can join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock, right here on MPBN Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, relieving stress and why we need to. With me in the studio, Dr. Craig Brett. He's Mercy Hospital's Medical Director of Cardiology. And Dr. Benjamin Grasso, Medical Director of Behavioral Health at Mercy. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Headed to Kathy, listening from Brooklyn or visiting Maine from Brooklyn?
Living in Brooklyn.
Oh, Brooklyn, Maine. I'm sorry, I misread my
Brooklyn,
screen
Maine.
There.
Uh-huh.
Beautiful Brooklyn, Maine. How are you?
Well, thank you. Reasonably. My question is, are there people in Maine working on specifically PTSD from childhood trauma, but when the person's an adult several decades past the trauma? But the symptoms are very similar of what the returning soldiers are reporting.
And this is really an emerging field of study, isn't it, Dr. Grasso?
Well, yes, it's a crucial point that PTSD hangs around for a long time. Some of us think it perhaps never really goes away, but it's particularly important to be cognizant of children who've been exposed to traumatic events and to intervene early. Absolutely.
Isn't there more new information about the more traumatic events and the more kinds of traumatic events and stressors you've had as a child, the more health problems you are going to have as an adult?
There is a literature on that, absolutely. And at a common sense level, it certainly makes sense that the more exposure one has at a very young age to horrific events, in some cases, just alters one's body and one's ability to navigate the world, to navigate relationships, function in school, become an independent, productive member of our society.
All right, Kathy, thanks for your call. Headed to Damariscotta and Jennifer. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
I would like to talk about the mind-body connection. I am a 40-something mother of three teenagers. I'm healthy. I don't eat. I don't smoke or eat unhealthy or drink alcohol, and I'm active. And 2 years ago, I developed a non-life-threatening arrhythmia called a PVC, and they were quite profound. I felt them in my chest. They weren't just little flutters. They were quite profound. There wasn't anything that was particularly stressful that I was feeling at that time in my life or that I recognized that was stressful. And, of course, I went through a battery of tests, and everyone said that basically I'm just going to beat to a different drummer, and we'll have to either take medication to control the arrhythmias, which I tried, but they gave me other symptoms that were, you know, troubling to me. So I decided not to take those, and I just manage them now myself. But over time, over the last 2 years, I've come to recognize that these arrhythmias, if you will, are really stress-induced. And for me, that was a difficult challenge to accept that. I didn't feel that there was a lot of stress in my life, or didn't recognize that there was. I'd always been able to manage my life, or I felt as though I could manage it without a problem. And I think that's part of which was my problem was the acceptance piece, is saying, gee, having three kids, a busy life, a job, bills, et cetera, is stress in itself.
Right, and Dr. Grasso talked about that earlier, a shame for feeling stressed. But let me ask you before I turn to the doctors, Jennifer, when you say you've really achieved this level of self-awareness of that there are stressors that bring on these arrhythmia, what is an example of a stressor that you have identified?
I think raising three kids who are all teens. I have twin girls and a son. They're all close in age in their teens. Nothing that they were doing particularly, it's just worry. It's wondering if, you know, are they doing good in school? Are they making friends? Just normal everyday worries that we have as parents were stressors for me. I did have some family members who died, but they were expected to pass. It wasn't, you know, something that we weren't expecting. But those in themselves caused me great stress, I guess, inside in my mind. When I ultimately decided that this was stress and not a cardiac condition, because I'm a nurse and I really had a hard time with saying arrhythmias are not something I'm supposed to have, in my 40s, I really mourned it. I let go, and it's a little better, but I did let go of believing this wasn't stress. And that came after 3 months ago. I developed shingles in my 40s and recognized, wow, I guess I need to step back and really do some soul searching and you know, look at my life and look at my body and how I'm not, maybe not accepting some of the things as stress and just as, you know.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your experience and your story. We all kind of have too high of expectations for ourselves and sort of unrealistic expectations, don't we?
I think, Jennifer, I think your story illustrates several points. I mean, one is that these PVCs, which is the abbreviation for the audience, is a premature ventricular contraction or an extra beat or a palpitation, is a very common manifestation of stress. It really reflects electrical irritability of the heart. And for most people, they're benign. They're not a threat, but they don't feel right. And they're a very common manifestation of stress. And just as in your case, it's often almost every day at Mercy Cardiology, I see people with what you're describing. And it's often oftentimes a situation like yours where they don't feel overtly stressed, but, you know, then they go through it. They're the mother of several kids and they have this going on and that going on and bills to be paid. And, you know, it's a very common manifestation of how stress can affect the heart. And it sounds like in your case, realizing or finding that this was not a reflection of a more serious underlying heart problem helped you manage that in some degree.
And I would like to add that, Jennifer, that having something that's stress-induced, that it can be provoked by stress, does not mean that you are somehow personally responsible for bringing those symptoms on yourself. It's very hard work having a body, and the body has a mind of its own, if you will. There are some things we can impact and many things we cannot. I would just say in general, not, again, to blame ourselves, even for things that could be impacted by some of our behavior. You're doing your best in a complicated world with three teenagers and maintaining a career and many other things. In many ways, you should be applauding yourself for your accomplishments.
Thanks for calling, Jennifer. Headed to Wellington and Liza. Hi, Liza. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for taking my call. This might be perfect timing after the call we just had. I wanted to go back and touch on that neat woman sailor who happened to be blind, and she was saying how she likes to go outside and just sing, and it makes her feel better. It lowers her stress. When I was in graduate school at Florida State, I was studying music performance, and I was fortunate enough to take a lot of music therapy classes. Florida State has a great music therapy program, and they've done a lot of studies. Unfortunately, I can't cite any of them specifically about how music lowers stress levels, specifically singing. And it, you know, you do a lot of deep breathing when it comes to singing. It's been shown to lower your blood pressure as well as lower your heart rate. You know, you do get that deep breathing from the diaphragmatic breathing like you were talking about earlier. You know, and the music's also a wonderful way to cope with various stress levels in your life, whether it's singing or you use an instrument. I play tuba professionally, and I like to use tuba at the end of a long day to kind of de-stress and play music. And I just think it's wonderful that in this day and age, we've had a numerous amount of studies done on the effectiveness of music therapy. The VA uses music therapy. There are a lot of people that are recognizing the benefit of that as a wonderful way to cope with stress.
Thanks so much, Liza.
Thank you.
We're agreeing. We're having nods of agreement here in the room. Headed to Frederick in South Portland. Hi, Frederick. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Hey, I really appreciate the show. Had a chance to reflect on some of the incidence rates of chronic disease in my own family, birth family. But what I wanted to ask was about the European system versus our system. And I'm wondering if there's evidence that the incidence rates of these chronic diseases are any less in Western Europe, you know, where there is much more of a support system for people's lives, whether it be healthcare or non-debt creating educational system or job training and that kind of, you know, social support that people have in Western Europe.
Well, you know, the incidence of heart attack and stroke being conditions that reflect vascular problems is pretty similar among the European countries and our own. Those data are shared, at various committees and meetings that I attend. So it is true. You cite some stresses that they may not have, and I wonder if there are other stressors that replace those, because the incidence rates are pretty similar, at least for those two conditions.
Thanks, Frederick, for your call. One thought that I've had since the beginning of the show, when, Ben, you brought up the whole point that we have evolved as humans to deal with stress or not deal with stress, there is some irony, isn't there, that we're living in a time when, you know, there's not famine or pestilence right now. Most of us aren't, you know, being chased by wild animals, yet we seem to have increasing amounts of stress and it affecting our lives.
It's an excellent point. The perception of threat is a huge thing. I'm thinking back to the caller who has three teenagers. And as a parent, you know, I worry greatly about the well-being of my young adult daughters in the world. It's a complicated world, even though perhaps most of us have, or many of us have enough to eat and are basically safe. But the intrusion of media and of a media that some of us think can be poisonous to young adults and children, there's, again, back to a sense of or perception of threat that is equally powerful in provoking the stress reaction.
We have a call from Joanna. Joanna, go ahead.
Okay, good. Thank you. I called earlier, but someone just, one of the doctors said something very interesting. I'm a volunteer guardian ad litem, and I deal mostly with teenagers, some of whom have been in a foster care system since birth. And he was talking about how stressed they are because of their circumstances. And we give these kids time after time after time psychological counseling. I'm just wondering, and after a while it just rolls right off their backs. They say, yeah, oh, go away. But I'm wondering if we couldn't develop a course in stress reduction and see if that would help them. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. It's complicated to try to rectify some of the early wrongs that occur in young children's lives, but there's some wonderful things. There's the whole ACT acceptance and commitment therapy movement that I think is a great model that can be used to teach children, young adults, and adults basically how to live in the world, manage our bodies and our minds. And some of the ideas, while simple, are a little bit almost counterintuitive, but very learnable. There are workbooks that are available, and I think that's an excellent idea.
Joanna, thanks so much. Before we go, I want to just get some really practical advice from both of you. All of us, or most of us, feel stress in our day-to-day lives. What are the symptoms to pay attention to?
You know, I want to get back, Jennifer, to putting the symptoms of stress that might mimic the symptoms of heart problems in context with what other risk factors that person may have for having heart problems. So, you know, people in general need to know what their risk profile is. So you really need to know if your cholesterol is elevated. You need to know what your blood pressure is, whether you have problems with blood sugar. People that have abnormalities in those things are already at risk for developing vascular problems. And those people really need to respond to symptoms that might just be stress, but might not be. And so symptoms of chest pain or heart racing or shortness of breath in somebody who has risk factors, you don't want to just assume those are stress. You want to get that checked out. You know, on the other end of the spectrum, a healthy younger person without risk factors who has chest pain or heart racing, that's most likely going to be a stress-related symptom. There's a gray zone. There's intermediate cases where you probably just need to get looked at if you're having symptoms like this that can't be explained.
And Dr. Grasso, from your perspective?
My answer would be, in the limited time we have, to get to know how our minds work. And I mean this in a very concrete and specific way. It turns out that our minds really are problem-solving oriented. They tend to generate thoughts, all sorts of thoughts that are really not under our control, at least many of the thoughts that bubble up in the course of a given day. And I would encourage the audience in general to consider a different frame of reference, to be able to observe the mind, observe the thoughts with a little bit of healthy detachment, and not to automatically take them as gospel, if you will. It's a different way of being as a human being, but I think it's crucial. And I would add in a good mix of humor and passion and fun.
Humor, passion, and fun. And finally, we started the program, or toward the beginning of the program, talking about the beginning of the school year. And you mentioned to me during one of the breaks how you help a kid. Kind of depends on what kind of kid you've got.
Absolutely. The world can be divided up, roughly speaking, into introverts and extroverts. About a quarter of all of us are introverts, myself included, which makes doing a radio show especially fun.
Well, you're doing great.
Thank you so much. But for those of us who are introverts, what replenishes us is to retreat from the world. And that's really what restores us. Whereas for three quarters of you folks who are extroverts, it's you probably find your energy and replenishment in social settings with many other people, a lot of sort of social energy. I think this is crucial for parents to recognize in their children that the solution for one's children isn't necessarily to make sure that, you know, your daughter or your son is with a bunch of their friends, you know, at all times, because we want them to belong and be a part of something. They may need some time themselves.
Wow, sounds like a whole nother show. That's really interesting. Both of you, thank you so much for being here. Benjamin Grasso, Medical Director of Behavioral Health at Mercy Hospital. Craig Brett, Mercy Hospital's Medical Director of Cardiology. Nikki Shields ran the board today. Our intern, Josh Gauthier, answered your calls. We had additional help from the MPBN web team. Main Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith. Tomorrow on Main Calling, financial literacy, why it matters and how to achieve it. Join us for a conversation about saving money, spending money, and understanding the state of the economy as it applies to you. And that will be hosted by Keith Shortall. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Main Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.